This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
~75% of all dogs in the U.S. alone have some form of anxiety. 75%. I've had pet parents tell me that they're afraid to leave the house because they're afraid their dogs will either destroy it or hurt themselves. It is a big problem for many pet parents. And there are a lot of trainers out there who have their own methods of how to help. But one trainer is actually a canine psychotherapist. And she's developed a form of training called canine cognitive behavior therapy that's based on the human type of therapy called CBT, cognitive behavior therapy. It's really interesting. And it's been working for years with anxious dogs, aggressive dogs, adolescent dogs, and others. Her name is Billy Groom, and her company, Upward Dogology, helps pet parents learn these techniques for their anxious or aggressive dogs. And she's also woven that into something she founded called the Institute of Canine Psychotherapy, which Billy's going to tell us more about. I'm really excited to have Billy on the show today because what she's doing is working. It's different. And we want to know more about it. So you're listening to the Pet Health Coach on Pet Life Radio. I'm Jody Teich, your host. And we're going to take a very short break from our sponsor because they're going to help us keep the lights on. But don't go away. Grab that healthy beverage. When we come back, you're going to meet Billy. You're going to learn about a very original form of training that's working and has been working for years and might help you too.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Pet Health Coach on Pet Life Radio. I'm Jody Teich, your host. We're here today with Billy Groom, founder of Upward Dogology and the Institute of Canine Psychotherapy. Billy's method of training called Canine Cognitive Behavior Therapy is different. And really, it's something that most of us may not have heard of before, but she's having such success with it over the years that publications like Psychology Today has singled it out to report on. Billy's won awards as an author. She's a speaker. She's a podcaster as well. And she's a fierce animal welfare supporter. And we love her for that. So let's welcome Billy today. Billy's going to tell us more about this. Hi, Billy.
Hi, Jody. Thank you so much. So great to be here.
My pleasure. Welcome to the show. I guess first, tell my audience what a canine psychotherapist is.
That is such a good question. I've never been asked that in all the shows I've been on. It is interesting. Psychotherapy works more with the brain and the emotions and cognition, not with the behavior as such. So behaviors do get addressed. I want my dog's behavior addressed. You do, and I understand that. But when we're working with dogs that the behaviors are stemming from emotion and cognition, we need to work with resetting the brain and allowing for decision-making, self-regulation, and leading to intrinsic motivation. These types of things, whereas different professions, which people seem to think are the same profession, but they're actually very different. A trainer might use standard conditioning to teach right from wrong. So that's great for a puppy, right? Or even for older dogs. So they're using reinforcements, hopefully not negative, to, just to simply teach right from wrong and to socialize and to, you know, encourage good brain patterns and that type of thing. And then a behaviorist still uses conditioning methods as they are your veterinary behaviorist would use probably counter conditioning and maybe classic. And so they're dealing a little bit with behaviors that have already occurred that we might not be thrilled about, so to say. And they're using conditioning methods. So again, reactive reinforcements. They are recognizing emotions, but the platform that they use is still in the conditioning realm, which is, that's a whole topic unto itself. So things like clicker training is a technique in conditioning.
Mm, we've all heard about clicker training.
Right? So it's not a method unto itself. It's a method that, it's a technique that adheres to conditioning.
It's more of a Pavlov's dogs kind of thing, like clicker training.
Anytime you're reacting to a behavior to encourage or discourage it, or a thought pattern, you're doing conditioning. So it's really quite a wide variety. With psychotherapeutic methods, we are working with the brain in other areas. We're not working with the behavior. We're working with the emotions and the cognition.
It sounds like a deeper dive into the dog and as an individual and how that dog shows up in the world based on what that individual dog has been through and how that individual dog's brain works. Yeah?
Yes, it's interesting that you say that. Well, CBT is used on humans all the time, extremely successfully. So this just follows that same platform.
Tell us more about what that is.
Yeah. But it's interesting that you say that, that it is about the individual, because one of the first things we do is look at where the emotion is at that time. So we look at the reason for the behavior. And when I say that, I'm not talking, trauma or abuse. I'm talking more about, is it a habit? Is it a learned behavior? Is it due to overprocessing, lack of processing? Is it cognitive dissonance? Do they just get very upset when something doesn't match what they think it should, and that leads them to a state of anxiety?
Yeah, maybe they're oversensitive to noise.
Yes. And if they're oversensitive to noise, is it because it's learned or a habit, or is it? So it could be almost anything. And what we want to do is, if it's a habit, just like same with people with habits, if you have a habit and you know it's wrong, conditioning methods are intended to teach right from wrong or to discourage you from doing that bad habit or encourage you to do a different habit. Whereas if you know that and your brain just goes into a place, your brain just keeps going there and you just keep doing that habit, we want to work with exercises that allow you to self-regulate, allow you to process and stop, make different decisions, make better decisions.
So I have a question at this point, which just popped up and is, I think, something it's interesting to me. Hopefully other people will think it's interesting too that are listening. So for a dog, from your experience, are they capable, once they learn this self-regulation, of thinking, I'm about to do this bad habit, I am going to now do the good habit? Are they capable of that? Do you know?
I don't know. Yes, I do, because we do it all the time.
Okay, so they are capable of that kind of decision making.
They are, but you have to use a method that's intended to do that.
Yeah.
You get right now, the reason why a lot of trainers and behaviorists are looking to learn this method, which I offer on at the Institute, is because it does reach a totally different level where you're getting intrinsic motivation. You can't, it doesn't make other methods wrong or ineffective. It's just the intent or goal of them is not to do that. They're not intended to induce this, stages of processing that lead to decision-making, that lead to intrinsic motivation and self-regulation. Having said that, it's just like people. Some dogs don't. Some dogs, as long as the person is there guiding and using these skills and tools, they will. But some right off the top are like, ooh, especially with anxiety. Because dogs, just like people, love it when their brain doesn't go into a state of panic. We do exercises that proactively prevent the brain from going into that state. And the more that we do those exercises, which depend on what I was just talking about, whether it was a habit or whether it came from learned behavior. So we're going to do different exercises depending on a number of different factors. And when that happens, it's just like people. Dogs are, ooh, I like that feeling. That feels really good.
Right. Stimulating the pleasure center. Yeah. It sounds like, and maybe I got this wrong, but that this kind of training stimulates a dog to think in a deeper way than clicker training. Because there is this cognitive decision-making process that is taught. And one is that true, that it kind of stimulates them to think in a deeper way than they might normally? And two, if it is true, is it maybe more satisfying because it allows them, their brains to be more engaged? You know, dogs need to work. Dogs need to have a job, I think, to be their happiest, especially certain breeds of dogs. So you know where I'm going with this. What do you think about that?
I do. There's a lot there. I think what dogs like the most about it is they realize that their person understands what's in their brain and how they're feeling, which is comforting. So that's the first thing that happens, is it actually changes perception of their human. Even if they're super bonded with their human, which happens a lot. So I work only with dogs over the age of 6 months due to brain development. So the dogs in the adolescent stage who had a wonderful upbringing, they did very well at, standard conditioning methods during puppyhood and all went well. And then they hit adolescence. So they're, and then, you know, they know right from wrong. They're just choosing to not do it.
Okay.
They know right from wrong, but they're sort of like, I wonder what happens if I do this, or I wonder what happens. And they just hit a very, what people would consider a challenging stage. And it is. But once we switch over to CBT, we're actually recognizing the cognitive skills that are leading to that. And we, like you said, we work them. We actually work with what the dog is already thinking and doing. I'm hoping that there's a lot of your listeners now kind of thinking about their kids, right? Like how you have to adapt and grow as their kids hit different stages.
Of course.
Although you're still the same parent and you still have your own, you know, parenting style, you adapt and adjust so that you're working with your child's brain development. It's the same with dogs.
So, Billy, when you work with people who have rescued or adopted, now, oftentimes you hear about, you know, personality disorders and fears and problems with dogs that have been rescued and adopted. Not only, we certainly hear about issues from dogs that have been, you know, purchased from breeders, et cetera, and so forth. But in this specific instance, what do you notice that maybe has some commonality with animals that have had maybe rough histories, that have been rescued? Do you notice any commonalities across the board? Because I know every animal is different, but do you?
They have learned how to survive. There's a reason they're still alive. So they have learned behavior. They have habits. And just like people, we need to acknowledge and recognize that, recognize the emotions, where they're coming from, and be able to provide them with these literally brain skills and tools that allow them to make these different decisions. And I should say that decisions are different than choice. So canine enrichment is choice, which is great. You know, you're still using cognition there. what we really need to do is when we work with these dogs, for one, it's really important to recognize that they are using their cognitive skills. They are using those. If we don't work with that, their perception of us is that we don't understand them. So we need to have exercises that recognize what's important to them and recognize their thought pattern and include and insert into these times where they are comfortable. So this is the interesting thing about CBT, is it works very little, extremely little, in the challenging moment and with the stimuli, which can be challenging for people when they have a dog because they just want their psychotherapist to, you got to see what my dog is like in this situation. You've got to, no, we don't. We need to work in other situations that practice the brain processing and making decisions and self-regulating at other times. Then when we move to those more challenging times, the brain has already practiced doing that. There's no reward that we're moving forward. We are literally moving forward the dog's ability and the skills, whatever those skills are that we have with that particular dog, because they're different. So first we learn what the dog already knows and likes. We pull off of that and we incorporate exercises in other times to practice if they need practice processing more before they react, right? If you get a dog that's just highly reactive, just goes red zone super quickly, we don't work in that time. We take other times where even though what they're deciding quickly is what we might want, we want to practice. Same with people with CBT. We practice recognizing our thought patterns and recognizing what we're doing. So that's how exactly we do that. It's actually quite easy and it's quite fun. So I love working with pet parents. I do, because they see it very quickly. They see changes in their dog. Oh, wow. You know, even if it's not what they specifically are concerned about, but they can see their dog start to hunt and make different decisions and like doing it. And they practice that. And it's so fun because it's bonding and they love it. And it's not reward-based at all. The reward is inherent. It's whatever is important to the dog, because the reward is not what's moved forward. That's conditioning methods. What we move forward are the exercises that allow the dog to process and make these decisions.
Very interesting.
For every dog. It's really kind of cool. And it gets creative, because I'll work with the pet parents really, and their feedback to me is absolutely essential. That's another requirement of CBT, is there needs to be feedback, because based on that feedback, we're going to advance and change and move forward. And we're going to hit that point where the dogs, like you asked earlier about self-regulation and intrinsic motivation, can they do that? Yes. With this method, they can. So we keep working on that. And often by the time, you know, their advancement has happened, they see so many changes in their dog. It's just a beautiful thing. When I'm working in ICP, in the Institute, working with a professional who's learning the method as a whole, they're following it with multiple different dogs, with different factors that affect what exercises we do and when. But a parent only has to learn it for their dog. But when a professional's learning it, again, it's so great to work with them, because they start to really get involved. Oh, okay, so if the dog is this way or is that way, or we see these changes, or what happens if the dog decides this, you know, because they are their own being. But there's always a platform. There's always something that we go back to. Great. Just like any scientifically proven method, it follows this platform. So a lot of people know CBT for humans.
Oh, yeah. It's been around a long time. So I want to see if I got this right, and then we're going to need to take a break. So training the dog in these methods to be able to make better decisions and really to work with them on a cognitive level is done away from red zone situations so that they can practice. And that makes total sense, because why would you want to throw them when they, before they're skilled, into a reactive situation? So it's practice, practice. And pet parents need to understand that there is this interim period where their dog is learning and evolving in terms of how to deal with that red zone situation, so that by the time they get to the red zone situation, they already have these skills somewhat under their belt, so to speak.
Exactly, Jody.
I got that right. Okay, perfect.
Which can be, I should just add, that can be 4 to 10 days. Can be very.
Well, this is my next question, Billy. About how long? I know it's different for every animal, but on the average, over the years, you've been doing this a long time. Do you find that you work with a pet parent to get their animal and them from where they are to where they want to be?
Well, we have the additional element of the human.
Of course.
That makes a difference. What's interesting, which surprises a lot of people, is if we start working with a dog in the early adolescent stage, so 6, 8 months, a year, their brain is still developing. And there's actually a course that I have on the ICP platform that is adolescent brain development. It's presented by a neuroscientist.
Yeah.
She's a great, great instructor. So that brain is still developing. So I can't make a brain develop any faster than it does. But we certainly see changes and advancements so that pet parents are on the top side of things. Right? They're feeling like they're not behind the eight ball anymore. They have skills, they have tools, they can see, they can feel that they're getting more calm manageability, better bond, better understanding of their dog and what to do, and they have these skills. But at some point, they just continue to do that, and they can take a break. They don't have to continue paying. But the idea is they need these skills and tools to develop and grow as their dog's brain develops and grows. If we're working with a dog that's over the age of 2, 2.5, 3, it often goes a lot faster because the brain's fully developed. So we have a lot we can pull off on there.
Okay, good.
We get in a rescued dog, getting back to your rescued dog question, that the program that I have for initially getting in a foster or rescue, it works on a 3-day, 10-day, 3-week.
Okay.
Because we start right off the top with very basic exercises that connect the dog's brain, literally their emotions and their cognition, with us.
Got it.
So they view us as understanding what's important to them. So we're not teaching, we're not training. We're not training at all. We are recognizing their thought patterns and inserting skills and tools that connect us with that.
Yeah, it sounds almost like focus and facilitate. Like you're getting like the dog to focus on certain key foundational pieces for this.
And they love it.
And then facilitating them responding in, you know, the way that we want based on this focus on the things that they love and the understanding of what's going on for them emotionally. We have to take a break. I could talk forever with you about this, and we're going to talk some more. In fact, when we come back, we're going to talk not only more about, you know, how this really interesting method works and the kinds of things that Billy has been able to do with some of her canine charges. But we're going to also talk about ways that you can learn more about Billy through things that she's done, award-winning book and other things where you can find her and learn more about her. So don't go away. Just refresh that healthy beverage, get cozy, and we'll be right back.
Begging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand, only from Pet Life Radio.
Let's Talk Pets.
Let's Talk Pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back. If you just joined, you're listening to the Pet Health Coach on Pet Life Radio. I am Jody Teich, your host. And we're here today with Billy Groom. We're not calling Billy a trainer. We're calling Billy a canine psychotherapist who has created a form of canine behavior work called CCBT, based on the human cognitive behavioral therapy that has been so successful over the years. Billy has found that success too with dogs. It's very interesting, and I invite you to learn more about it. So, Billy, some of the dogs that you've worked with, and you've worked with so many dogs over the years, how many years have you been doing this now?
Well, I started working with dogs over 3.5 decades ago.
Wow. And what about with CCBT?
It was something that emerged unintentionally. I just was working a lot with adolescent dogs, and they were surrendered a lot, and rescue organizations were having a challenging time getting fosters for them and homing them. And it just really intrigued me, where was that challenge with that adolescent dog? And so I started to work with ones from just different backgrounds, different breeds, different backgrounds, different all sorts of things. And I'm forever grateful to the rescues back then that entrusted me with their dogs. But I learned, and I never took dog training, which I think is actually a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wasn't trying to find a dog training method.
You weren't indoctrinated.
Yeah, and I wasn't, yeah. But I also never intended to do that. I just intended, I wanted to figure out what was going on. And I just found it very interesting as I moved forward to start teaching it to other people. And then I had to sort of stop and say, what am I doing? Why is this working? I mean, we're getting into hundreds and hundreds of dogs here. And I started to create a pattern and a recipe of what I was doing so I could teach it better. And then when I started to work with psychologists and scientists, that's when I learned it was actually CBT.
Oh, gosh, that's so cool.
It was so cool because I think I resonate with CBT because of my childhood and upbringing, where I didn't feel as though anyone really understood me, and people were nervous. If you have an unconventional upbringing, they don't really know sometimes how to communicate and work and understand. And as a child, that I think affected me. And I just thought, you know what? These dogs aren't, they have their own way of thinking and being, but they're not necessarily traumatized. And if they are, we can easily communicate and work with them. We just need to do that by understanding them. Instead of taking an approach of training them, we're taking an approach of understanding them and building a communication, not based on, so for example, somebody buying me an ice cream cone, it doesn't change my perception of them. I would take the ice cream cone, I'd eat it, but I still might not be comfortable all the time with everything, right? But other things would make me, you know, comfortable when somebody understood me as a person and had a way of talking to me. And then that just started out exactly like that, wishy-washy. You know, decades ago, I was just sort of doing it, but not exactly sure how. And the light bulb went on when a man who specializes in child trauma rehab, and he really was big proponent of taking CBT approach as opposed to conditioning with working with these children back in, you know, the 60s, 70s, 80s, as it was developing along. And he's the one who said to me, your approach is completely CBT. And that was like a light bulb for me.
Oh.
And then I went and studied it and researched it and realized why I naturally gravitated to it. And then I was able to really formulate it. So that's when then I could now open the Institute of Canine Psychotherapy, because it is a defined, proven. So then once I had this recipe, so to speak, that followed CBT, in the flexible and adaptable way and creative way that it does, I've applied it to hundreds of dogs a year.
So I just want to pause right here because a couple of thoughts have come up based on what you were saying. One is everyone just wants to feel seen, heard, and understood.
Yes.
This sounds like what it does for the dogs that you work with, which is such a beautiful thing, and develops a huge amount of trust and opens space. So in working with all of these dogs, can you share with us like a success story? You have hundreds. I'm sure. Share one or two that are especially near and dear to you, because I know that I love to hear that as a pet parent, and I'm sure there are others listening who would love to hear, you know, an animal who went from this to that, and happy, happy, joy, joy times for the pet parent.
I think for me, it's the ones that come right off the street. You know, I have a soft spot for those. And when I say street, independently, they could be in a community or something, but then come into a home. But the ones where the people have quote unquote tried everything and they've been told to euthanize, they've been told to surrender by professionals, and the people just feel lost and they don't know what to do. And the trainers they've had were very good at what they did. The trainers were really, really wanting to help, but the method that they know just, you know, isn't, they're just such different methods with different intents and principles and platforms. They're not intended to do the same thing for the same reason. So when that happens, when it, you just see that the human gets so happy and feels so proud and the dog feel that, it's amazing. I think there's just so many because it's just such an amazing feeling. And it doesn't take long and it's not difficult. It's just it's so interesting because pet parents are really so many of them are tenacious and dedicated to their dog. They're going to find something that works. And it's just so beautiful working with them. But it's also great working with the professionals in the industry and the trainers who want to expand and grow their business and their be able to help more pet parents and more people. And I love working with the fosters. If I had to pick one, I would say maybe one of my foster or one of the rescue organizations in Mexico that had a dog that was badly beaten up and just getting really terrible life on the street, and brought that dog in, turned out to be deaf. And the foster that had that dog was really experienced, a very good foster and very dedicated, but could not get this just such high abuse on the street, such fear. And she was leaving. She was an American foster in Mexico. So something had to give. So we had a short time period and she was very dedicated. And the person who ran the foster also had a home in Canada for that dog. But we had to get that dog to be able to at least be comfortable getting off a couch and trusting a person. And within a very short time period, 2 to 3 weeks, and that dog was on a plane, went up to Canada. And then I worked with the adopters and it went smoothly, went so beautifully. That was there, you know, I just didn't want to let that rescue org down because they do so much good.
So the dog was able to like step into who he or she was meant to be.
Yeah, we just taught the adopter what the dog knew. This is what the dog knows. It's such a different mindset.
It really is. Because that, even saying that to me, it's like, how would you do that?
Because we know what the dog knows because we worked with the dog. We set skills. And so when we transfer, then the dog goes, oh, you know what I know.
Okay.
You know how to relate to me.
Safe
you know
space. What I know.
It's not just, you know, you can transfer a blanket and you can give treats and all that stuff too. But it's not the same.
No.
It's not the same. And it just went so beautifully. And so,
And that dog is living his or her best life with the...
In Canada.
Yeah, the doctor. Beautiful.
That, not near me in Canada. I'm in Canada, but not in Robinson.
Yeah. Well, we don't have a lot of time left, but I do want to get to a couple of things that are, you know, I want people to understand. If you want to read Billy's book, Billy has an award-winning book called The Art of Urban People with Adopted and Rescued Dogs Methodology. Can you briefly tell my listeners about what they would be diving into if they got that book?
That's interesting. That book is not a training manual, neither is my podcast, but what it does is talk about, it's an introduction to change the mindset and the way that we think of these adopted and rescued dogs and adolescent dogs. That's what UPWARD is, Urban People with either Adolescent and Adopted and Rescued Dogs. That's the acronym.
Okay.
So it introduces different concepts and mindsets and ways of thinking when we're working with these dogs, and whether we're fostering or bringing them into our lives or whatever we're doing with them. So it was intended to bring forth a new mindset from the humans. So retrain the human brain on how to think about these dogs. And, you know, they're misunderstood. They're the misunderstood dogs, right? So it's a lot of that. It's my experiences, it's how the dog world is and why it can be, you know, sometimes challenging. So it's more of a...
Sounds like it's a foundational piece for people with adopted or rescued dogs to then maybe, you know, starting to work on this methodology, which is really my next question. If pet parents, you know, they don't live near you, but they do want to work using CCBT with their animal, how can they do that? On your ICP site, do you have trainers who have gone through the program and are available for training? Do you train online? You need to work with the dog. So, I mean, how does that work for people that
virtual
want to
training
use?
Is incredible.
Do it with this?
Oh, I do. Yeah, I still... Oh, okay. I'm addicted to pet parents. I'm so addicted. I think it's just my comfort zone. So I do still do it 100% virtual, and it works phenomenally well.
Okay.
Because you know, I get videos. I tell them send me a video of this, send me a video of that. And then we go through them and we talk about it and just go back and forth. And it just becomes a flow. It's wonderful.
That's great.
We love that.
Where can people find you?
Yep. InstituteofCaninePsychotherapy.com.
Okay.
There's also UpwardDogology.com, but that'll take you to the Institute one. So the other way of doing it as well is, yes, there are professionals taking, you know, that there's different people that are taking the full course. So one of them works in a vet clinic. The other one is a coach in a completely different industry. And then there's obviously quite a few certified trainers who took the standard certifications, and they want to expand and grow and get more tools in their toolbox and be able to work with those rescued and dogs with anxiety and behaviors associated with aggression, those types of things, to a higher level. So there are a lot of certified trainers taking it as well, but they have a mentoring program. They have an extensive mentoring program. So we do a lot of one-on-one working with dogs in that program. So a pet parent could be that.
Okay. So there are different ways in. Yeah. But they can learn all about that on the site.
Yeah. They have the option to do that. And they can just contact me. It depends on a number of things, you know.
Okay. So Institute of Canine Psychotherapy?
Yes.
.com. Perfect. So... First of all, I want to thank you so much for sharing this really beautiful and interesting information with all of us. I want to mention to all of you that Billy has been asked to do a TEDx talk next year in March, I believe. So, you know, keep your eye out for that. I guess you'll have information on your site about that when, you know, as it gets closer, yeah?
And LinkedIn and Facebook.
All right. Perfect. Right? Perfect. Instagram, perfect.
You know, yeah. And those links are all on the website as well. And
perfect.
My podcast, actually, people really like the podcast.
Are you talking about Dog Training Disrupted?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So you don't teach about the training. What do you do on the podcast?
Just the podcast is really cool. People really like it. The first couple episodes just talk about, it gets deeper into CCBT.
Okay.
And what the difference and why you would need it. And it uses a lot of comparisons to different, to children, to humans, to professions, to all sorts of things. And people can really wrap their head around it. And it's just a really natural, same with the book. They both won awards just from just the natural way of speaking. And just people get it. Then I also have some scientific studies that I dissect, which is kind of funny because here they are these, you know, because I also have taken some PhD courses. And so I'm currently in another PhD course. So a full program. So sometimes I'll take those scientific studies and dissect them right down to what does this mean with you, with your dog in the home? You know, so your dog has these cognitive abilities. What does that mean to you today when your dog just got into the garbage?
Okay, that sounds good. That sounds really
interesting. Yeah, those ones do really well. Yeah. Because it like starts out like this and then it's, and this is how, what cognitive skills your dog was using when they ripped your couch apart.
fun times.
Fun, isn't that fun? Like it really, and like, oh, okay, I get it. Now that makes so much sense. And as soon as the light bulb goes on for the people, it just makes such a difference. So there's lots of different things on that podcast.
Okay.
There's with different people and professionals.
Great.
And
perfect. Well, Billy, our time is up.
I'm sorry.
But no, please. It was really great information. Thank you so much for being here. Once again, to find Billy, if you want to work with her or someone that she's trained through the program at ICP, Institute for Canine Psychotherapy.com, and you can get more information there. Thank you, Billy.
Thank you, Jody. It was wonderful. Thanks again.
I'm so glad. Yeah, it was great. And thank you all for listening. As a certified health coach for people and pets, my mission is to share holistic healing information for the whole family to create vibrant health. So tune in next time for expert interviews, tips to give the animals we love the longest and most vibrant life we can. I'm Jody Teich, and this is the Pet Health Coach.
Let's talk pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.